Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
All right, welcome into Cleveland Browns Daily. Merely Bo, the great Z, a sun-kissed Thursday. Mr. Zagura.
Am I on?
You are.
I'm old.
All right. You're not. I mean, we are.
No, I'm old. Today.
Okay.
As of today, I am very old because
the birthday's not till July. Oh, mama.
Is now 16 years old and will be driving an automobile on her own.
Well, have you prepared her for this?
She's quite prepared. She's an excellent driver.
Okay.
I feel very comfortable, and I told her, I said, I have full trust in you, and you have earned this privilege to.
So, let's say she says, and I don't know, I doubt kids even do this anymore. Well, maybe they do this. Maybe she's like, let's say it happens this weekend. Dad, can I take your car to the Apple store?
She's got her.
Just in my hypothetical world, because you said you trusted.
Yeah, I would let her.
Okay. That, to me, is the sign of it. Like, if I say yes, go, then that would is trust. Because it's having their own car.
Fine.
Right?
I still trust their
Of course, but it's less. On the trust scale.
You're saying, will I let
I'm
her,
saying yes. Maximum trust is, here's the keys to my car.
Yep, go ahead.
You're fine. Yep. I'm not worried about it.
I would.
Well, you'd be worried about it, but you would trust.
I would.
Who taught you how to drive?
I remember doing driver's training. I mean,
did you drive?
I'm sure my parents, both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
You don't remember it?
I don't really remember being like taught how to drive.
It wasn't like, hey, we got to get this sorted out. Let's go.
Yeah. No, it was more like I could do it. I do remember.
Yeah.
I do remember that. And I want to go ahead and preface this. Not my fault.
What do I do?
No, in the legal world, there are accidents that happen, and you can be at fault or you can be the not at fault party.
Yeah, okay. You were the aggrieved?
I was the aggrieved in my dad's Toyota Camry.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was a 1993 Toyota Camry in a taupe color.
A newer model for when this happened, probably.
So this
been a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to the golf course. I get hit.
Okay.
Not my fault. Again, let me just...
Completely not. Law enforcement
I'm
felt
not
that way.
Responsibility.
The person who was at fault felt this way. To no fault of your own.
That's right.
Yep. An understanding Pedro was met.
I call. Not Pedro.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna see if you, knowing what you know.
Yeah. I think I know.
What? Give me what his first question was. And maybe the tone that you think he took with me.
Well, okay. So I'm guessing he called you DS, because that was his favorite thing to call you, right?
He did not call me that, no. However,
his first thing was not, are you okay? I'm sure of that.
Correct.
What's the status of the car, I think, would probably be first.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He would say, well, how bad is it? Not, did you break an arm? How's your neck? Do you have any injuries? Are you in the hospital?
Okay?
Are you okay?
No.
No. First thing was... What's the status of the vehicle?
I was calling him, and my voice worked, so he...
that was enough.
I think he felt like I was, in fact, okay. And I don't even remember how I called him, because it's not like
what
I
was
had
the
a
accident?
Cell phone. Some guy, like, I was coming off and turning left, and he went through and kind of hit me in the back left of the car.
Yeah.
Like, had no business even driving. He should have been stopped.
For sure.
So, correct. He asked me... You know, about the car,
mm-hmm.
I told him, and it was going to need some pretty significant
work. Yeah, we got a lot going on here.
And he said, and I
feel like I know the tone for sure.
He said, you just destroyed the one thing I love.
The 1993 Toyota Camry was the one thing he loved.
He really loved that car.
It's a hell of a car.
And by the way, I didn't destroy it.
No,
I was an innocent bystander too, and it wasn't destroyed. But I at that point, I knew.
Do you think?
And I knew he has a great affection for me. But
do you think that his response to you wrecking the Camry was more elevated,
I'd like you to rephrase that.
The Camry being wrecked by a negligent driver of which you are of no fault?
Thank you.
Or Cameron's dad's anger at driving the Porsche an extra or the Ferrari an extra 300 miles and having it go through the garage and totaled. Whose anger is that? A similar anger?
It wasn't the one thing I love.
Wasn't
it's unbelievable.
So much. You were not driving a 1961 Ferrari California.
But it wasn't so much that he was angry.
Yeah.
As like I could feel like his pain, and then I was to blame for this deep pain. So I think maybe his pain might have been similar to Cameron's dad.
That's what I'm thinking.
Which is insane. An outrageous.
The two vehicles are not similar in any way.
No.
Cameron's a fine car.
It was a lovely car.
It's not the one true thing that you love.
I can't imagine that he grew up and was like, God, I can't wait to have this.
No.
Taupe Camry.
No, if anything, from a Toyota, you're probably looking at a Supra.
Supra back in the day.
That's probably what you were looking for.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I hope, and I told Arden, I said, listen, whatever you, if you ever need me to come get you from anywhere, no matter what's going on,
right.
I will always do that rather than the alternative. And I said, if anything happens, whether it's your fault or not, as long as you're okay, we'll be fine.
We'll work through it.
We'll work through it.
Amazing. So on brand. It's funny.
It's so on brand.
Your father and my father have next to nothing in common, and yet everything in common.
It's unreal.
They're the same human. They just are different upbringings, lifestyles, all of it. But their attitude towards everything when you tell me a Pedro story, it sounds exactly like my dad. So anytime you say, "Well, what do you think he would say?" I just go, "Well, what would my dad have said?" And that's what he would have done.
He may have said, "Not destroyed me. I hurt you. Hurt the way, whatever it was."
The only thing I love. Oh my God!
Oh man,
that is great. I actually,
it's so funny.
I actually,
that's why we have such a kinship.
We do, yeah. That's right. Similar up, scarred,
similar
yokes. Very different places, but similar yokes.
Oh man.
I failed my driver's test.
What?
When I took it, yeah.
No, so I
was taught how to drive. Probably by 6 or 7, and taught how to drive a stick shift by the first vehicle I drove was, I was 7 or 8, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there. Certainly, I remember being in first grade, that type of time. Now, that doesn't mean I'm like out on the streets. What I mean by that is like in a field full of hay, I would get in a pickup truck and I would have to shift it from first gear to second gear as people threw hay bales on the back of the pickup truck. So if you're saying to yourself, well, wow, that's crazy. You have a 6, 7, 8-year-old kid behind the wheel of a pickup truck with a ton of hay on the back of it driving slowly down a field. Does this seem like this would be safe? The answer probably is no.
What if you accidentally threw it into reverse one day?
Well, it's a stick, so you can't. You're going to be able to do that. But you, at the what if I would have, I don't know, slipped and floored it or any number of things could have gone wrong. I was a little kid. Like, I can't imagine Bootsy driving a pickup truck with a ton of hay on the
right
back
now.
Of it. Right now. But that's what I did. So I drove, by the time I was 12 or, certainly by the time I was 10 or 12, I was driving semi-trucks and tractors and about everything else by the time I was that age. So I could drive anything on the farm by the time I was 12. And I've said before, like, you could drive, without a driver's license in Montana, you could drive agriculture equipment, farm ranch equipment, into town and then out. You just couldn't go on the interstate, is what they call it. But you could drive into town and out. So, like,
it's like Griff.
Yeah, he's probably grew up similar. So it's insane. Yeah, I'd have a semi truck with a full thing full of grain on the back, and then a trailer behind it pulling more grain. Essentially, I mean, if I wrecked it, it would have been a bomb, quite honestly, with that. So flammable. So it comes time to take my driver's. I'm like, yeah, right. I mean, are you kidding? You're going to test me how to drive? I can drive anything.
I've been driving for forever.
I can drive a semi. I can back a semi truck into a square this big. Watch me. So I go to take the actual driver part of the test, and we're at the courthouse in Conrad, Montana, and I get in, and no big deal. Lady hops in, the driver instructor. She goes, go out here and make a right. All right, hop in. Go out to. I mean, most people are worried about the parallel parking. I'm like, this parallel parking, please. You kidding? So go out. In my sleep. Go out to make a right. And as I make the right, there are cones in the right lane. Okay. In the right lane, the one that you would turn into.
Yeah.
There are cones on the edge of it. And in my head, it made me think that the cones were in the lane and that I was to drive on the left side of the road.
Fair.
Okay.
So is it the maneuverability test cones? Is that what?
No, no. It was actual construction. In Montana, when you take a driver's test, you just go do it on the street.
Got it.
Like, you don't go to a parking lot. Like, you just go do it on the street.
Got it.
And they drive around town with you. So I make a right-hand turn, and instead of turning in the right lane, I turn in the left. And I just start driving down the left-hand side. And she goes, what are you doing? And I'm like, excuse me? And she's like, you're driving in the wrong lane. Please go park the car. And that was it. Fail.
That's it.
So you get
excuse
a
miss. There's construction crazy. In the right lane, so I went into the left lane.
I was 15, and I wasn't going to argue with someone of authority. So you get two fails, and then you got to take the test and do everything all over again. So then I was like gun shy. So I didn't go back for months to like do the second one, because I'm like, this now all of a sudden the odds are tough. What if I screw up again? Meantime, I can drive anything.
I believe in you.
Crazy. That happened.
Zagura, I would advise your daughter today, the biggest thing that they're trying to do now is trying to stump you on the old seatbelt. The instructor will get in the car and not put the seatbelt on. The moment you put it in drive, fail. You're not allowed to go a foot. You have to.
Oh, she's doing the actual thing today?
Yeah.
You have to go, please put your seatbelt on. That's how they're busting people these days.
They want you to say, please put your seatbelt on?
Because they want it top of mind. Seatbelts are the law. Like, they will get in. They will not be belted. They will sit there, and they'll wait.
Oh, they want you to say, please put on your seatbelt.
Exactly.
Oh, crafty intel out of Gibby there.
It happened with my kid.
That's very good.
She had gotten a heads up on it and worked her way around it.
Nice. Good job. Very good job. That's good information right there. Give that to
sent.
Miss Ardandrea.
Yes, sent.
There you go. East was fun last night. Did you watch any of the Sixers in the Heat? Those 7 o'clock games win.
I just saw the highlights of it because it was a one-point game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 106-105, I want to say something.
105-104. Yep, okay. Yep.
I was in the ballpark.
Yep.
Yeah, it's fun because there are consequences. It's a game with consequences.
It is.
That's what sports at its best when there are consequences.
Yes. It's a game seven experience. Now, the late games in both the West and the East were trash. The Hawks got boat race. That was done.
Yeah.
Did you guys see what happened to the Lions today?
Of Detroit.
No.
All right. So they have their big uniform reveal next week, right? Yep. The 22nd.
Yeah.
So Fanatics, in a Fanatics ad that was like one of those things that's on, you know, that services you with your social, Fanatics had their full flight, the uniforms, two Hutchinsons, one Goff. They put it out in a Fanatics ad.
I'm looking at
so
it right now.
It happened. They're really great.
Look it up, and it pops
right up. It pops right up. Just type in Lions into it, and you'll see what they did. So apparently it was a Fanatics ad. Fanatics made it go public. So how do the Lions handle this? Have you seen how they handled it?
No.
So it's so awesome.
They confirmed, yep.
So what are you going to do? Like, it's out, right? So they get Alem McNeil, I believe is his name. He's the defensive tackle.
Uh-huh.
They get him. It's like an 8-second clip where he goes, hey, whoever leaked the uniforms, thanks. Thanks for wrecking our hard work. Video to come of like the – because, you know, they do a reveal video, all of those things.
Yeah, there's a
but
lot
But they like
that goes
were like
into it.
They weren't acting like it didn't happen. They were like, look, this happened. It's out. It sucks. We were planning for this for next week. We're going to do a big thing. But the reality is that once it's out, it's out. And like the fact that they had that video ready, it's almost like they knew it was going to get wrecked, and so they were prepared for it to be wrecked,
which is great.
Yeah,
I go back to our big reveal in 2015, and I remember doing this show, and of course everybody should remember that I was duped.
Yes,
but I don't know if you remember this, Gibbe. They were out in various like Dick's Sporting Goods, maybe.
Yes, some there were people at Dick's Sporting Goods that were like, I think these are the new unis.
They were like,
I'm like
on hangers for sale. Sure.
So did you
days before the reveal?
Were you guys taking calls and were people
yes.
and were
so
you like saying,
me, and I was like, and that they're is like, they're like these uniforms are these are terrible.
Did not like them.
And I'm like, don't worry, it's fake. I've seen them. They're great.
They ain't it.
This isn't it.
Yeah,
I was wrong.
Except you were wrong. It was.
That's where I had the scores, but it was inverted.
Misdirection
it was,
scores.
Yeah, it was like a score of deceit.
All right.
That being said, they look pretty.
They look great.
Gorgeous.
They're great.
Perfect. They're exactly what I wanted.
They're a modern Barry, is what they are. It's a very modern take on the Barry uniform. It looks like they got the coloring right.
It's perfect.
They did stick with a black one, which I'm not
love
crazy
it
about.
I like the black. Back in the day. Like Roy Williams was there.
That's not way back in the day.
That's pretty back in the
day. It's a franchise that's been around for 70 years or whatever.
Probably, 20 years ago?
They put the black on. That was when everybody had black for black's sake. Everybody had a black uniform in the early 2000s.
The idea, though, of like a black and blue Ford Shelby Mustang Cobra or whatever.
I think they're blue and white, though, right?
Blue and white. But they get, yeah. I like a black Mustang. Why not?
Roy Williams is currently 42 years old.
Yes, that was 20 years ago.
That's not way, way back. You want us to feel old, then that'll do it.
It was before I had a child, and that child is now driving. So it was a long time ago.
What's that?
Drafted in 04, seventh pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, they look great. You can't tell if they're redoing the logo too or if they're just uniforms. But remember, they put extra striping on the logo. It used to be just the flat lion, and now it's got some striping to it.
Yeah, a little
more detail.
Contrast. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought they did very good. It goes back to here's the thing, though, for all of the teams that don't want this stuff to happen and they want those big pops on social for the reveals, you really have to make a decision. And I think it's a simple one. And honestly, you could just do like what Tiger did with Sunday Red. In this case, it would actually work. Just say merch is not available for 2 weeks and give none of it to manufacturers. Give none
coming
of it.
Coming soon.
Coming soon. Just say, here's it, but you can't buy it right now.
Yep.
Because as soon as you want to sell it right away, it's going to get leaked.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't – who's gotten away with this without there being a leak?
The jerseys haven't necessarily leaked that often.
I feel like part of them did. Cal McNair got in front of his, and he's like, yeah, this is it. Because he was sick of the leaks, and he's like, fine, this is the away uniform. You happy?
I think it's hard to keep these kind of things when you have so many people that are –
and everything's this elaborate reveal.
Right.
And so the more elaborate the reveal, the more people that know.
Right.
It's the old John F. Wolfe. You have a secret, tell nobody.
Tell nobody.
Tell nobody.
You
want to say it that way. That's it. But I think they look good.
By the way, did you see one of that? Let me make sure it's not in around the sports world. Do we have anything on what's going on with Jason Kelce in here?
No.
Okay. Do you know what happened to Jason Kelce?
Well, I know he's getting a game show.
Okay.
What else?
That's Travis.
Oh, Travis. Travis. Yes, Travis. So, Travis is doing the game show?
Yes.
Okay.
So you're smarter. It's like a spinoff.
Smarter.
So they had a New Heights podcast, a live New Heights podcast event.
All right.
One of the things that they did, it included the Lom Baby Games, a New Heights themed tournament full of zany events inspired by the brothers, complete with a pool of chili.
Okay, a pool of chili.
On the most recent episode of the podcast, Jason said the idea for the chili pool game was for participants to dig through the chili to find replicas of his 2018 Super Bowl ring. Okay. As you guys know, this game existed because I continually lose my Super Bowl ring. He said, and I don't even know if Travis knows this, but I legitimately lost my Super Bowl ring in this event. They could not find it. So he has lost his Super Bowl ring in the chili. He believes it's now in Landfill, but he lost it in a pool of chili at the New Heights event. And he's already put an insurance claim in.
He lost his actual Super Bowl ring?
Yeah.
Yes.
In a barrel of chili?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't there just like a giant colander that you could run it through to keep it?
According to Jason, socks with some make-believe rings were added to the pool of chili. And then there was actually one real ring in there, which was my Super Bowl ring, he told Travis on the show. Jason said the New Heights team attempted to sift through the chili once more to find Jason's ring the next day, but had no luck. We've still yet to find it. All of the stuff has been thrown away, so I can safely assume that my Super Bowl ring is now in a landfill someplace in the Cincinnati tri-state area.
The other option would be that somebody got it.
So the only thing he could think of to explain what happened to the sock with his ring in is that it got kicked out of the way and made its way out of the pool and was thrown away in some shape or form. But yes, the Super Bowl ring is officially gone. We've already put the insurance claim in, which I think insurance company might have some things here to say about whether they're going to do that or not. Jason Travis said 100% they're going to have things to say, especially if you're going to tell the entire world how you actually lost it.
Not exactly
said,
stolen at a golf
kids,
course.
If you're watching at home, do not do what Jason's doing. Don't do this.
No, probably not. So they did that live event. That's the one Burrow was at. They did it live in Cincinnati because they both played there.
Yep.
And then they actually used like the Skyline Chili stuff, probably, like that Cincinnati chili.
Travis also got his degree from the University of Cincinnati. This was all lining up. Yes.
Okay. All right.
So he got his degree and promptly chugged a beer on the stage and then picked the guy up.
All right. Here's my prediction. this has nothing to do with him, the person, and this is not how I feel about him, but this is, they are headed to overexposure dislike. That's where they're headed. Travis especially. You're a hero long enough, you become the villain.
Yes.
It's getting there. It'll be get to a point where there's a pushback of like, okay, it's too much. It's too much.
You know what I've noticed about you in the first third of 2024?
Let's go.
You've tired of a lot of things.
Oh, I'm not tired of them.
Your eras to be over. You're like, these shoes are over. No,
I'm on. You watch.
This,
you watch.
These Kelsey's
that.
Are over.
No.
I'm done with it.
No, I'm not tired. The first one I believe on. I don't feel that way about them. I think they're both wildly entertaining.
I think they're great.
And I think Travis is great. But it's one of those things where if you get too much and then society pushes back.
Yeah.
You go, it's too much. Can't
he's
do
dating
it.
Taylor. He's the
it's a lot going on.
Alive.
Yeah, it's a lot going on.
Just wait till they get engaged. You guys were out on Valentine's Day, dude.
True love.
True love is in the air.
Yeah. What was the other? What
album
was the other?
Tomorrow too for her, so it could be. This is the week to do it.
So this would be your victory lap. I was on the right side of the Lady Gaga. Other one, right?
Bradley Cooper.
Yeah,
I feel like that's. But yeah,
because I had
you didn't believe that they had ever.
No, no.
I think I did.
And you did. You thought when he left the baby mama that they were gonna
correct
go.
Yeah,
but not.
There was a real chemistry.
They really had a lot of chemistry there.
There was a chemistry there.
They really did.
It
was. So it's over. The flag football season's over, Uno?
No,
it's
no,
not.
No.
It's
no.
A victory Thursday.
Oh, you're off
They're
to
off
the championship.
To the, right.
So it's an 8-0 game at half, and you guys win by 2 scores.
Yeah. A lot of defense this week.
This is you played a lot of defense.
Uno
we
had
as a, team did, and I did
as well. Uno had a PBU that led directly to a pick, according to my sources.
In
the end zone, it was an like so that.
So your pass breakup became an interception.
Yes,
like
similar
a tip ball?
To the end of the Bears game this year, where the ball tipped up in the air and it was intercepted.
Yeah,
they had it in the end zone. I flicked it up into the air and it was caught by one of my teammates for an interception.
What a clutch play out of you!
Yeah,
did you know what you were doing? Or was it just instincts?
I was really going to rip their flag off because I thought I could tackle them before the end zone.
Sure,
and I ended up just flailing my arms and it worked. So it was kind of knew what I was doing, but also not really.
This is also offensively, this is becoming kind of your standard stat line, 2 for 25, but you get a 2-pointer.
Yeah, I got in the end zone
so
at least in a 2-pointer.
You're kind of a late era Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, but if, listen,
not enough production. We need you more be around 4 or 5 catches.
Can I give him a credit?
58.
I'm gonna when you force an interception in the end zone, that's like scoring a touchdown to me. So I'm gonna give him credit for that.
Well, yeah, the one thing that's interesting, though, is this is a low-scoring flag game. Usually flag games are a lot. So was it defenses were great, or was it the quarterback struggled?
There was a lot of – early in the game, it was a lot of turnovers from the two QBs.
Okay.
So they were just throwing interceptions that were kind of easy ones.
Okay.
And then late in the game, it was more our defense just tightened up.
I like it.
Corey texted us a game plan, like 9 o'clock yesterday morning. Here's our zone defense. Here's how we're going to run it. And a scouting report of all of the offensive players on the other team.
Amazing.
Dude, that like it has gotten serious. Corey was telling me some of the other teams are having like meetings, like they're watching film. It's
okay.
Lunacy.
That's so great.
It's fine.
There's film of this?
Yeah, where's they getting the film from?
I have no idea.
Who's taping this?
Who's taping it?
I think they're using like security cameras or something that's in the field house.
Oh my
house
god,
that they, can get
they better
access
talk to Frayne about that.
Because I don't know how he got all this information on the team we were playing last week. He was telling us everything he had. Here's their
is
leading
this a,
receiver.
Is this a Spygate situation?
It feels
it could be.
Is this?
Yeah.
It feels like.
Without permission filming and sharing? Who do you play in the chipper?
Team Orange, who's like our heated rival at this point.
So have you played this year? Have you played Team Orange this year?
We played them the last week of the regular season.
Oh, this was a barn burner.
Yeah.
All right, so it's Team Orange, and what are you guys?
Team Black.
Team Black.
Yeah,
they added that new player middle at the last.
Oh,
game of
this
the
was
season.
The controversial ad.
Yeah,
what do you got?
It's Ass right there.
Where? That's him on the right.
Uh huh.
God, look at him!
Look at him!
I never
he's waiting
I'd
for us.
His
he
presence.
Wants. We got to go to break, so he wants to come hang out. He wants to go say. He wants to say hello to you.
Let's just keep talking then. We don't need to break. I've always wondered, like, let's just do an hour straight, see what happens.
Who gets hurt?
Nobody gets hurt.
I'd like us to be on remote at the conference room table outside in the middle.
It would have been great. That's where we
were out there. It would have been great. Yeah. All right. Andrew Berry spoke today. lengthy press conference. We will have that for you. Z with Hollywood Higgins as
That's right.
Today on the program, it's also a mailbag edition of Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of Cleveland Browns. So get your questions into Gibbe. Don't wave him in. I don't want him in.
You do too.
I do
you
not. Oh, should we mention that we signed free agent a new player? Do you want to give
Jermaine
us a scouting
report? Yeah. Tackle depth there.
Good job.
You need tackles in the offseason last year.
It would have been funnier if you just sort of tackle depth there. Full stop. That's it. That's Andrew Berry coming up next. That's Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN.
He's got some technique issues.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Champions League, the free gaming community for Browns fans around the world. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/Champions League to join in on the fun now. Andrew Berry met with the media earlier this morning. Let's have a listen.
So this is always one of my favorite weeks of the year because it's like the first week of school. We get all of our players back for the start of the offseason program. And, you know, we're just a week outside of the NFL draft, which is always an exciting time for the organization because you know, we're, 7 days away from seeing which rookie players that we're going to be able to add, you know, add to our team. It's been a great process, you know, working with, you know, the whole front office staff, our scouts who make incredible sacrifices throughout the fall, being away from their families, constantly on the road, our coaching staff, who does a phenomenal job in the personnel processes, and then our research and strategy group, who does a great job of, you know, pulling together all of our information as we ultimately build the board and look forward to making final decisions. So it's a really cool period, you know, this time of the calendar year, and we're excited to see what next week holds.
At what point on Friday, next Friday, can you actually start saying, okay, these are our options?
So it probably starts Thursday night, and where you kind of re-strategize a little bit based on what's happened on Thursday. But in reality, you probably get a more narrow focus, you know, Zach, maybe 10, call it 10 picks out, because that's when really players become, I guess, more in striking distance, so to speak.
Andrew, I saw Belichick quoted this week about, you know, judging rookies, and he said a year and a half is generally is what they typically look, you know, he would typically look at. Do you agree that a rookie needs about a year and a half for you can really get a good gauge, and what's sort of your philosophy in regards to that?
It's a good question, Chris. I think it depends on position, and I think it depends on a prospect's individual you know, history. Like, you know, for instance, O-line and D-line, they're typically longer developing positions. You know, running back, that's a position that typically plays, you know, more quickly, but that can be variable depending on, hey, was this player a small school prospect that didn't have a ton of resources? Did this person, is he relatively new to the position? Is he relatively new to the sport? You know, so that all can play a factor. I think what I would say is pretty consistent is that just like the transition from college to the NFL for rookies in general, regardless of where you're taking, it's hard. I wish I had the statistic off the top of my head, but I think it was something like maybe 32% of rookies play an average of 17 snaps a game, and that's before you even get to the quality of snaps that they're playing. So it's very rare that you know, a young player comes right out of the chute and produces like a starter, you know, which is why we prefer to be in a roster state where if we bring a young player aboard, they can develop into a role and then ultimately develop into a starter as opposed to being pressed into that from day one.
Andrew, do you have any more of a feeling of whether you will use the pick or trade down again?
Good question, Tony. I will probably have a better feel to Zach's question, you know, once those, you know, once we get to 10 picks out. It really just depends on how the board falls, if I'm being truthful, Tony. So I'm not sure as we sit here today, but we'll see if we can break the trend of making it 3 years in a row without a second round pick.
Not having a first round pick?
Look, you want as many picks, as many high picks as possible. I wouldn't say that I miss it on like Thursday or Friday night. I'm probably more focused on the players we can acquire. You know, and they're not necessarily the end all be all. They're a great resource to have. You know, but how you can deploy them can be in a variety of ways.
As someone who likes to move up and down the board, when you have just two picks in the top 150, but you got six overall, what's your flexibility look like next weekend?
I mean, it's obviously less flexible than if you have your full slate of picks, but you know, that doesn't mean that you can't manage your resources creatively to, you know, whether it's increase the volume or increase the quality. So a large part of it will depend on what's available and, you know, what dance partners we may or may not have.
Following up on what Tom was asking you, now you're 3 years into it without that first-round pick. So how different has that draft process been in these 3 years?
It really hasn't been that different, Scott, in terms of how we prepare. You know, where it's probably been the most different, it's just been a slower Thursday night. In terms of how we think about building the board or how we think about evaluating prospects or, you know, managing our picks, that really hasn't fundamentally changed.
Feel like less excitement without a first round pick inside the building, maybe?
Not at all. Not at all. I understand that from an external perspective because those are usually the most well-recognized prospects, you know, coming into the draft. You know, we're excited about maximizing the group of players that we can acquire during the weekend. And, you know, there's still a number of good players up and down the draft board.
There's been a lot of talk about receivers in general. Every year you're going to see a depth at that position in the draft. Do you agree with that, and why is that?
Yeah, I actually do think that, you know, if you think about maybe the last decade versus 10 years into the future, I do think that you'll see more volume and quality, you know, at that position. I think it has it's a direct effect of just really how the game is played, really at the lower levels, right? The proliferation of, you know, 7-on-7 football and youth football, you know, now in high school, you know, kids are throwing the ball 30 times a game. You look at, you know, the advancement of spread football in college. And then even if you think at our, you know, in our game, you know, I think call it anywhere upwards from 65 to 70% of the game is played in 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, three receivers. And so I think a lot of the top athletes at the lower levels are going to that position. And it makes sense because we're in a passing league and we're in a passing, you know, a passing sport. And so I think that trend will probably hold.
Andrew, with the restructuring of Nick's contract and the way that's all set up, what does that kind of say about his availability for this season, his availability maybe early on, and how you just feel about him this year?
Yeah, so I, with Nick in his rehab, I think you guys have heard me say he's really attacked it very aggressively, you know, really since he's been able to in the fall. He's going at a good pace. It's still early. You know, he actually started, you know, running on land, you know, this past week. That's not to say that, you know, he's through the woods or anything, but, he's doing everything in his power. You know, he's progressing appropriately, but certainly the next few weeks, next few months will be big as we continue to increase, the load that he's able to put on his knee, and then how much he's ultimately able to do during his training.
Does the restructuring sort of reflect your expectations? I mean, it seems like he has an opportunity to make back all his money, but yet it sort of protects you guys. How does that sort
of? Yeah, I won't comment in detail on the contract, other than to say that I think that whenever you go through a situation like that, I think people think it's easy for like a club and agent to be adversarial. And, you know, with Nick's situation, I really applaud, you know, Nick and then, you know, his reps, Todd France and, you know, and AJ Stevens for being really collaborative partners and finding a solution that worked for, worked for everybody. I think everybody in this room is happy that Nick is back as a Cleveland Brown, and we're very optimistic that he's going to crush the rehab. And I'll share a quick story. I know this is not your question, Mary Kay, but I want to share a quick story. So our VP of Football Administration, Chris Cooper, who does a phenomenal job, in the contract management space, after we got the deal done with Nick, he was like, I'll be honest, one of the coolest, I'm looking forward to a lot this season, but one of the moments that I'm probably looking forward to the most and maybe at the top is the next time that Nick Chubb, runs out of that tunnel, right before the game and at Cleveland Brown Stadium. And I think Chris's sentiments probably speak for a lot of people in this room and a lot of people in the fan base.
In terms of Deshaun and his rehab, he was saying the other day that Dr. Alatraci is really pushing a conservative approach, and I'm sure you guys are going to abide by that. I was just curious, how often do you meet with his group, your trainers, to kind of reassess where he's at, and are you satisfied with where he's at right now?
Yeah, we have a regular cadence, regular checkpoints, Tom. This week, Deshaun was thrown up to 40 yards. Like he's in a pretty good spot. I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse. Thank you. But he's progressing, as appropriate. We're really, really pleased with the work that he's put in and really pleased with how the shoulder's responding. But we're still in the middle of a rehab process. So, we know that it can take, different, left and right turns, but we're pretty optimistic in terms of what we've seen so far.
The other day, Denzel Ward said he was kind of lobbying to keep the cornerbacks together, which brings up Greg Newsom. Anything new on that?
Nothing new on that. I want as many good corners as possible, Tony. We have, going back to my point about the league playing in 11 personnel, your base offense and defense is really more three receivers and three corners in this day and age. So that's really how we think about it. Like, even though we're technically a 4-3, how many snaps will you realistically see us play in base? Not very many over the course of the season. So corner is a premium position. We have three guys who can play press man coverage at a very, very, very high level. That's not a skill set that I'm looking to give away.
When we talked to Deshaun at his restaurant opening last week, he was very definitive that he will be starting the opener. You guys have said he'll be ready for the opener. Does that still hold true, even though you said there's going to be some turns, left and right turns or whatever, but I mean, he will still be ready for the opener?
We feel really good about it. I'm not going to make any predictions, Mary Kay, just because, you just never know, but that's certainly our expectation.
All right, there you go. Part two of that conversation with AB coming up a little bit later. Also going to have Z with Rashard Higgins coming up.
You can feel his comfort,
yeah,
in terms of the way the operation is going, what this roster is, and what he's been able to accomplish and his standing in this organization. You can just feel his comfort, and I think it's a good thing for all of us.
Very. Yeah, it's a win.
Yeah.
A win across the board, my friend. We'll go around the sports world, including Belichick on McAfee. We'll have a little bit of that excerpt for you. Elliot Wolf, our old buddy, saying the Pats could be open for business. Get to all of this coming up next. Listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back in Cleveland Browns Daily. After the recent heavy rains and storms, especially in the Portage County area, if your roof is in need of inspection, look no further than Renew Home Exteriors. It's incredible what they
very
can do.
Timely.
They do it very quickly. The artificial intelligence to assess the damage, they do it quickly. They do it accurately. They're going to work directly with your insurance company to ensure your claims, get you approved hassle-free. Rest easy. Worry less about your roof with the help of Renew Home Exteriors. Visit renewestimate.com. To learn more, they service all of Northeast Ohio. You had something you wanted to read?
Yeah, this is going to be the Nathan Fact of the day,
fact of the day,
it's the day, it's the fact of the day, fact of the day, fact of the day, it's the Griff fact of the day. The sound of the golf ball going into the hole.
Oh, I like the idea of it. Or, yeah, I like that, like just trickling in to the cup.
I
like
that little. All right, you have your computer here.
Yep.
I'd like you to open up your internet browser.
It's open.
Okay. I would like you to go to Wikipedia.
All right. Okay.
Within Wikipedia now.
Yep.
You can search. You see where there's the search Wikipedia?
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Okay. And I'd like you to type in wedding crashers.
Oh, I saw this.
I will not give you the benefit.
Here's what I think. I think somebody probably.
Hold on.
I think somebody probably. I know what it says.
Let's go ahead and just read. Can you read it?
Yeah, I'll read
it.
Wedding Crashers is a 2005 American romantic comedy. Then all comedies are romantic comedies.
Maybe they are. Or maybe they are. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, I accept your apology.
This is what I. Okay, this doesn't even make sense.
That's what I say. I accept your apology.
What a laughable thing.
Chris Varner. Shout out Chris Varner.
Chris Varner was probably your boy, and he probably went into Wikipedia.
I've never
and put
met
it
Chris
in
Varner before.
Chris put it in.
He probably edited it.
Is Chris really S. Buckeye?
Yeah.
No.
That might be S.
No. This is a very thorough.
Very thorough, reputable.
Yes, very reputable.
How silly. Yeah, it's not, but that's fine. It's fine. I think it's fine if you want to just say all comedies are. Caddyshack, romantic comedy. Every comedy is a romantic comedy. Because you show me a comedy without a love interest, I'll wait.
Yeah.
Truth.
It is truth. It is the truth. I'm
so
just saying
they're all romantic
is.
Comedies then. There's no such thing as a comedy. There's only romantic comedies. So by this definition, the only thing that would be a comedy would be like a stand-up special.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's a true comedy.
That would be a true comedy. All right. We had Belichick. He's been busy.
So he did. They announced yesterday he's going to be on
he's
with
doing
McAfee
the draft, right?
And his crew at the draft. He did 38 minutes with McAfee yesterday.
Well,
and was pretty darn good in certain parts.
Yeah. What did you make of Kraft saying he adamantly he did not do it?
Okay, sure.
I'm with you.
Okay. It's millionaires versus billionaires.
I think that there would.
It was sourced on both. If you read the thing, it's sourced on both sides.
Yeah.
That Kraft made the call.
When
both Belichick
three
sides and Kraft sides.
So that makes me think that it's true, and I feel like him being adamant about it, he should just not comment on
you
it.
You just should have stopped.
Just stop. Yeah. I've slept on this now, and here I sit before you in the same exact seat feeling just as flabbergasted by the level of vitriol.
Yeah.
Now, I could say that I can relate, as we talked about, but it still seems a little surprising. But then again, me of all people shouldn't be surprised.
No. So here's Belichick on McAfee from, and this is in relationship to special teams. He's talking
about
special
teams,
the
new special teams rules. It got brought up.
Okay.
What does he think of it? And the person that asked it, I had no idea that Pac-Man Jones was now on that show too. Like,
Pat's
he
got a lot of money
to the corner, and Pac-Man's in the corner. I'm like, wait a minute, that's Pac-Man.
So that's just oddly. So remember that? Well, you guys probably don't, but that Premier Lacrosse League was down in Columbus last summer, and I took the boys and we went down there and went. Pac-Man Jones was like at midfield with the owner of it.
Huh. Like he's a Renaissance man.
He really is. He's everywhere. I think he must still live in Cincy. It's probably what it's all about, and he bounces around. All right, so this is
fantastic back and forth.
All right, so this is Pac-Man Jones and on McAfee with Belichick. Go.
Pac-Man Jones, obviously special teams All-Pro, has a question for you, Bill.
Coach, you was big in special teams. How do you feel that the new special team rules will affect the game?
Well, first of all, Pac-Man, I want to tell you that punt you returned against us with the Titans was total BS.
Oh, that was a good one.
It was third down, and I was standing there on the sideline, and I said, look, these guys can't move the ball. The only way they can score is if we punt it to Pac-Man and he returns it. So we are going out of bounds with this ball. It's right before the half. There's a minute to go in the half. I said, we are going out of bounds with this ball, and we're going to make them drive it because they can't score on our defense. And we punt it right down the middle, and you go 85 yards. And I tell you, I can't remember a situation I have been more upset about. And you killed us on that, just like I knew you were going to do. And before we even went on the field, it was third down we started talking about that. So I didn't get a chance to see after the game, you know, because that was a tough game there. You know, a lot of things happened in that game, but you killed us on that play. So
they killed a lot of people,
you know,
coach.
Say, okay, so how's that going to affect us? I would say a couple things. Number one, it looks like it's going to include like another, I don't know, whatever the number is, called 1,500 plays in the game that we didn't have in the last league-wide, right, that we haven't had in the last, you know, couple of years. So I think that there's more opportunity for players to play on special teams than there have been the last couple of years when literally 90% of the kickoffs are going out of the end zone. So I think that might affect the bottom part of the roster. And I would say with the new kickoff rules, because there's really no running involved, the kicking team's already down there, the return team's already set up, that there'll be more of an emphasis on size players in the return game than speed, where, you know, a lot of teams would cover with, you know, six or seven DB wide receiver types, you know, with their kickoff unit, and play with the same type of players on the kickoff return, play with a couple corners, a couple wide receivers on the front line that could run and get back and set up. Well, now there's no need for that. You just need guys who can play at the point of attack, shed blocks, and defend their space because of the new alignment. So I think it'll increase the size of the players that are on the field. And I do think that because everybody is spread across the field, that if these returners if they hit a little bit of space, they're gone, because it's just going to be a lot harder to overlap than what it was in the past. I don't like that they took the surprise onside kick out of it, although I wish that rule had been out when we played against you, Pat, because we always had to put another two guys over there to handle the spike kick, even though you never did it against us, but you did it against other teams, and that always screwed up our kickoff returns. So I wish that rule had been in place when we played against you, but it wasn't.
All right, several things. One, ain't he full of personality?
Yeah, fun Bill. All of a sudden.
Hey, just hanging out.
Look at this. Yeah.
What a joy.
No, remember when I was like on to Cincinnati? I'm an entertaining guy.
Here, watch all the personality I've got.
Yeah.
Photographic memory.
Very smart. Yeah. Yep. Clearly.
Yep. And he's right.
He is. I think it's going to be very interesting in special teams, and I think it could create a situation where you might have more offensive linemen, tight ends. I don't think the days of a lot of the DBs and receivers, like you were saying, you're not going to have them on there. You're going to want blockers and create one crease, and I think if you can get through a crease, you could be gone. I think there could be a lot more kick return touchdowns this year.
Which should be fun.
It should be so fun.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if we can actually get our very talented kick returner to the regular season. We have not been able to do that.
We've not been able to do that
in many, many years.
Yeah. That's good. I think he's going to be very good.
He's going to be great.
And he signed on with, he's going to do the stuff with Omaha. I think him and Saban are going to do like a Thursday night. Are they going to do like a watch along? They're going to do like a Manning cast thing.
Yeah.
With him and Saban.
Which
will be good.
Amazing.
Elliot Wolf, our old buddy, says the Patriots are open to anything at pick number 3, which is what you say this time of year.
Yep.
They would be the team to me that could have, like, they were the team that if they would have acquired Justin Fields or something like that, then they could have traded 3 and then got a bounty, because they need a lot.
I still cannot believe he ended up in Pittsburgh.
I can't either.
What are we missing?
I don't know. J.K. Dobbins signing with the Chargers, reuniting with Gus Edwards there. Just can't stay healthy. Just cannot stay healthy.
No. But that's a nice kind of budget backfield that they've got there.
It is, yeah. You showed me an H-Town Blue alleged helmet. That would be a miss for the Texans, as big as can be.
Yeah, so apparently there was a leak of the H-Town Blue helmet that's going to have a in the H-Town Blue with the H and then
it's
the red
giant
star, and then it looked like a Navy helmet, which is...
In the background, there are pallets of Riddell boxes, so I'm like, I don't know.
How do you not have a white one or a H-Town Blue colored one?
It's got to be. Maybe it's wrong. Maybe it's not real.
It looked pretty real. Usually when you see that, it looks quite real. I saw our buddy Ben Albright passing this along, the Broncos getting new uniforms as well. I think this will be wildly disappointing. There's going to be 3, according to a guy that he retweeted, and Ben would know. Matte navy, so a flat navy, which that does not look
gross.
As good unless it's black, and it's like a cannonball. Other than that, the flat ones don't look great. White, and then a blue throwback. The stripe down the middle is different and vastly improved, and the white helmets will have the horse head logo, not the old school D. So they're going to stay with that ridiculous horse head thing. Who's running? Who's making these decisions? Why can't they get this stuff right?
I'm gonna blame it on horse face.
Go ahead.
So are they going to have the blue helmet?
They're going to have the throwback blue
helmet.
Yes. But the primary are going to be this matte navy and then a white one.
So what uniform are they wearing with a throwback blue helmet?
Well, they must have a throwback uniform to wear
so
with
So either
it.
Orange.
Either orange
or white.
White
with the blue.
With the blue helmet. And then the rest, they got to wear these new white ones or the matte navy. But remember, there was that D, the white one with the D that they wore last year.
Yeah.
But they're not going to do that. It's going to have that horse, the new horse thing.
Why?
It's so simple, guys.
It really is.
So simple.
Yeah, those H Town Blue, that is a...
That's a debacle. They will get bombed if they draw, if that's real.
That's a massive miss.
Yes. That's a pretty simple thing to get
right. Everything's coming together. You got a squad. Yeah. You got a franchise quarterback, and you're going to trot that out?
That looks...
Here's all you have to do.
This is on UniWatch, and he's right. He said that I had a source who recently got a quick look at the Texans' alternate helmet and told me the logo was an H that sort of reminded me of the Hitman H from the old XFL. And if you click on that, it does. And... That's
all you had to do.
Not
all you had to do.
White?
If you are so married to that cow on the side of the helmet, all you had to do is a white version and pair them with the light blue jerseys.
Yes.
That's all you had to do.
And make the steer that
yes.
H-Town
reflect
blue.
It. That's it.
Yes.
This isn't hard.
No. Why are we so good at this?
Jeez.
I'm going to make an announcement. Bo and I are available for uniform consultancies for a reasonable fee.
Yeah, in. Right a lot of wrongs.
I want to know what the reasonable fee is.
I think it would be reasonable compared to what you know. They pay a lot of people for their thoughts on this nonsense.
Very reasonable.
Well, currently, yeah, the people you're paying, you're...
You blew it, boy.
You're throwing money away.
That is wild.
That's crazy. All right, we'll do the Griff Fact of the Day a little bit later.
Yeah, we can do it right before mail.
We're going to work that in a little bit later. All right, second hour of the program up next, including coming up right away, Z with Hollywood. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
This is great, man. Joined by Hollywood Higgins in studio again, back where it all started here with the Cleveland Browns. And today you retired as a Cleveland Brown. Why was that so important to you?
It was important because this organization was the first to believe in me, you know, and my whole slogan behind everything I did was make them believe, you know, make them believe in everything. And somebody had to believe in me. And it was the Browns. So It only made sense to go out the same way I came in.
It's just great seeing you.
Yeah.
We had a lot of good times in your time here with the Cleveland Browns.
Absolutely.
You know, when you kind of like think back on it now, you come out of Colorado State, kind of initially slow, and then you have the big 2018 season. Then you had to deal with some adversity in 2019.
Yep.
Big 2020 season again, the playoff year, kind of that magical season. So you really were kind of a part of this organization kind of really turning around and getting to where it is, you know, where we are now was built on the back of, I think, that 18 season, and certainly the 2020 season as well. Is that kind of, when you think back on it, what a wild ride it was for you in many ways? You did, a lot happened.
Insane.
In a few years.
Insane. Yeah, we first came in and it was like 0-16. It was like, wait. Oh, is this how the NFL really is? And then we go again, and it's like one and you get what I'm saying? We only won one game the next year, and it's like, man.
Hollywood, I remember. I was doing.
Is this I'm questioning football like that. Is this even for me, bro? Baker comes in. That boy got that swag about himself. You know what I'm saying? He come in. Jarvis come in. Everything's a little different, you know? And then we start going, and we winning games, and then here we go. We're in the playoffs. And it's like, it's the first time we've been in the playoffs since, what, 2000? And
it was a long time.
Yeah, yes. It was a long time. And it's like, man, you know what? This is the bar now. For the new classes that's coming in, hey, y'all seen what we did? We went to the playoffs. That should be the goal every year. Just make it to the playoffs. Getting a ring and getting a championship, that's what we want, though.
You know, while Sashi Brown was the GM at that time, Andrew Berry was kind of the top personnel guy in that front office that helped bring you in that class.
Absolutely.
And now he's back.
And he's doing it at a high level. You know, a lot of people expect a lot of things from Andrew Berry, and it's like, calm down, bro. He got this under control.
Yeah.
You know, he got what it takes. He knows what it takes. He's been here before, and believe in that guy. He believed in me, so I'm going to believe in him.
Yeah.
So.
I love it. You know, just sitting right here, seeing you smile, you always had kind of that magnetism and that connection, certainly with our fan base. And you mentioned with Bacon, you guys obviously vibed right away, walking the red carpet, all the celebrations, all of that stuff. What was kind of special to you about maybe this city, this fan base, and the relationship that you were able to forge with them? Because you were always immensely popular here with the Cleveland Browns.
I really, truly believe that this is America's favorite team. A lot of people say that it might be the Cowboys. This is a football town.
Oh, yeah.
And if we lose, everything is bad. But when we're winning, the food tastes good. Everything is just, like, on track. So, man, I love this fan base. You know, I discovered another fan base my last year with the Panthers. But, man, when I went over there, and it was just like, nothing compares to those Cleveland Browns fans, bro. You know, diehard
passion.
Fans. We had a sold-out stadium, and we were 0-15. Like, are you serious? You know, that's how much the game of football means to this town.
Yes.
And I'm truly honored to be a part of the Cleveland Browns for 6 years of my life. You know, it meant a lot to me. I've had kids while I was here.
Yeah.
I've seen it all.
Yes.
I've seen people, first rounders come, seen them go, and it's like, I still stood here and weathered the storm. And that meant a lot to me, you know, just knowing how much it meant to me, studying my playbook day in, day out. You know, there were sleepless nights, and I just know in order for me to play and step out on that field, I had to know what I was doing. I was the next man up, and I always had that mentality. Somebody get hurt, guess what? They had to call on me, and I had to know what each player had.
Yeah.
No matter what. And I really, truly believe that's what kept me at this organization so long. I had the brains.
And you had the desire and that work ethic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I put the work behind
you. You're reliable. You're where you're supposed to be when you were supposed to be there.
Absolutely.
You caught it if they threw it to you.
Yeah.
That's kind of the job.
That's all I had to do.
That's all I had to
catch the ball.
It's not that simple, though, right? It's not that simple to be where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there, be open, and then catch it when they throw it to you. But that's when you boil it down to the essence.
That's the receiver job.
That's the job right there.
Catch the ball.
Catch the ball. Well, when you think back, what were some of, like, your favorite, if there's a certain play or favorite moment of your time here? For me, I mean, the red carpet walk in Tennessee will always be, with Bake sliding
phenomenal.
In, flipping. I mean, that's
phenomenal.
Like, that is when I think, when I hear Hollywood Higgins, that's the first thing that comes into my mind.
Yeah. I think mine would be the iconic moment. You know, LeBron had his poster moment at the downtown. I think me and Baker's was when we did that. I think it was a double pass. Jarvis threw it to Baker, and then
against the Jets?
I ran it,
And Baker's kind of like.
Yeah, and he's swagging, and I'm like right behind him like, that's what I'm talking about.
That was the first win.
That was the one.
That was the Jets, Thursday Night Football.
That was the one.
Yeah.
And, bro, this city was electric, you know.
Yes. Fridges were opened.
Oh, my God. Man, I cannot describe the moment, but that was probably two of the best moments that I had. The other one was going to the playoffs. Insane. Insane, bro. The Steelers at home, and we just had a dog walk in the park with them. It was amazing.
It was like 28-0 before. It was 7-0 after the first play.
Listen, we wanted to go to the playoffs so bad.
Yeah.
And we knew what we needed to do.
For you, so I was one of the few, and I mean that literally, people that were at that game. It was just like friends and family of the team, friends and family of the Steelers.
What was it, COVID year, huh?
It was COVID year. There was nobody there. There were maybe, you weren't there. I was saying to them, I'm on the sideline, I was like, I know I'm here and this is real life, but, like, are you guys seeing the same things that I'm seeing on TV? Like, is this really happening right now?
I hope you see it.
You're seeing it,
because you do not want to miss this.
Was that wild for you? Because I just remember being there being like, this is so surreal that it was so, it was such a big moment. And we've, you know, you've been there, I've been there a ton of times in Pittsburgh. Like, what that environment is like outside of the COVID year,
yeah,
to what it was that night. And it would have probably been just as quiet because it was not a happy day for the Steelers. World.
Yeah.
But was that wild kind of as a player when you think back to that game, kind of just what an odd environment it was, but then you guys were out there having the time of your lives.
Yeah, and it all boils down to like the relationship that we had as individuals in that locker room. You know, we all bonded together, and at the end of the day, we're the ones that's out there battling it out day in, day out. And bro, I'm telling you, that feeling of that celebration in the locker room, and bro, we partied like it was 1999 again. it was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was. It was incredible. It was incredible. And you mentioned some of the guys, Jarvis. You had such a great room. Jarvis, yeah. Odell comes in. And you guys all just seemed DPJ early in his career. Mm-hmm. You guys all really, like, got bonded. Along so well and bonded so well.
Yeah.
You still talk to those guys and kind of what's that? That's probably one of the hardest things, right, when you leave is not getting to have, like, that time in the locker room with your brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me and Jarvis actually spoke right before I even came here.
Oh, nice.
And he was just like, man, congratulations. You know, a lot of people don't
get great dude.
A lot of people don't get to do this.
Yeah.
And just cherish every moment, you know. I talk to DPJ. I talk to O all the time. And we're still a brotherhood.
It's awesome.
You know, it's more than football. And we try to get together as much as we can, but got these kids, bro.
it's not a little different with kids. Freewheeling and dealing.
Yeah, bro.
You got to get somebody who's willing. You got two. Somebody you need maybe a
somebody
grandma.
Somebody got it. Somebody.
Say, hey, I'll take them both.
Somebody. But it's fun. It gives me something to look forward to every day.
Yeah.
And it's something new every day as well. You know. And I never thought that having kids would bring me this much excitement. You know, I used to ask Jarvis all the time, like, what is it like having a kid? He used to tell me, it's like loving your mom times 1,000. And then I really couldn't put that, I couldn't feel what that felt like.
No, you can't
when
now.
I had my son, and he, first time saying daddy, and it's like, bro, I love you, bro.
It's like a love that you didn't even know you were capable of.
Yeah, exactly.
You're getting me missing out. I'm a big emotional father as well.
Man, yeah, I love it, bro.
And let me tell you something. It is hard. It's very hard.
Yeah.
But it is the most rewarding thing you'll ever do. And it also goes like this. My daughter is turning 16.
Wow.
Thursday. She's going to be driving.
Wow.
Thursday. My son's 14. It's just like, it's wild. Blink of an eye. Now they're like full-on adults. Now they know they know more than me about it.
Yeah, blink of an eye.
In the blink of an eye. Well, dude, it's great to see you. I'm so glad that you were able to do this because, like I said, you were such – always great with us. We love getting a chance to talk to you. Always, we're down for anything, and you're beloved by our fans. So I'm gonna end with this one. What's the kind of put a tie a bow on it, as it were? What's one thing you'd want to say to the fans of the Cleveland Browns and the fans of obviously Hollywood Higgins?
I want to say that I bleed orange and brown. Thank you guys for believing in me. Thank you guys for trusting the process. This is the start of a new journey for me. And I couldn't be more proud than to retire Cleveland Browns. So thank you from me. Thank you from my family. Thank you, guys. Thank you all.
And thank you, Hollywood Higgins. Dude, awesome, man. Thank Congrats.
You. Thank you.
Oh, great stuff. Jeez. We good? All right. Very good, Uno. Very good. Uno in
there.
Are we sure? All right.
We're good.
Andrew Berry, the second portion of his press conference is coming up next. You'll listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Be part of one of the most passionate fan bases of the NFL. Join NextGen STM, presented by Ticketmaster. Official waitlist of your Cleveland Browns, being a NextGen STM, the best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. Now here is part two of AB's presser from earlier this morning.
If I remember correctly, you got Za'Darius last May. Mm-hmm. You didn't bring Shelby in until around training camp. It kind of felt like you were just waiting for something to happen with both of those moves. Are you in this same situation this year, or do you feel like that, you know, outside of the draft, you have augmented the roster as best as you can, or as most as you can?
Yeah, I would say that we're in the same position every year. I mean, I think the, you know, in 2020 we traded for, you know, Ronnie Harrison at the end of camp. In 21 we might have signed Malcolm Smith in August. I think it's easy to look at the player acquisition cycle as just like, oh, it's just free agency and it's just the draft. But really it's really from March to the trade deadline. And no roster is a finished product come May 1st. You know, certainly the highest volume periods of transaction are, call it, the first 3 days of free agency and then obviously the 3 days in the draft. But the work is definitely not done by that point. That's why the league as a whole, they're heavy into, you know, scouting the bottom of the roster during the preseason. You see a number of trades, you know, before the cutdown. You'll see signings in May as you know, some veterans are waiting to see what may be the best situations for them post draft. So our work doesn't stop after, Saturday afternoon. And we don't look at it as like, okay, hey, we want to do as much as possible to solve everything by then, because then the player transaction season is over, because it really goes through November.
Roster depth is probably as strong as it's been since you've been here, and there's not many opportunities for rookies maybe to immediately step in, start in the second round. So how do you balance that last year? Like, you traded to get a guy that could help you, like Elijah Moore and so forth. So how do you balance that, and is that what you look for, to see somebody can get on the field more so than developing guy down the road?
So probably two separate thoughts to that question. The first is, I don't think the NFL is full of surprises. I think you guys hear me say this every year, that you really get surprised in, you know, in both directions every year. I mean, okay, this is maybe not roster, but let's say a year ago at this time, if I was up here in my pre-draft presser and I said, all right, I've been to the future, and when we get to the Super Bowl, you're going to have Brittany Mahomes, Taylor Swift, Ice Spice, and Jason Kelsey all in the same suite watching the Super Bowl, you guys would have looked at me like I had five heads, right? So you just, you know, it's always full of surprises. And it's really the same thing with players, right? I don't think any of us anticipated going to the season and we would be down, you know, three tackles, Nick Chubb and Deshaun Watson for most of the year, that we would, you know, that we would lose, you know, Grant Delpit and Juan Thornhill and Rodney Cloud, you know, late in the season. So in terms of spots on the 53 or who's going to play what, like, it all looks good in May until adversity hits or something unexpected happens, whether it's injury or performance. Probably more generally, as we think of the current roster relative to the draft has always been about long-term investment in the roster. We don't think of it as, I talked earlier on how rare it is for a player to come in immediately and play at a starting caliber level. We really look at it with, okay, how are these players going to impact, call it, the 25 to 27, you know, Cleveland Browns. And if they develop quickly and produce with impact in their rookie season, that's great. We're not going to, you know, DeJuan Jones did that. We're not going to keep them off the field. But we really do look at it as in terms of a long-term investment in the team.
Curious, with the extra year that guys obviously have with the COVID year, just how has that impacted your guys' evaluation process for this draft, especially at certain positions that maybe you're looking at where there might be older prospects than what you're used to seeing?
I think probably the biggest area is how we think of maybe a prospect who's a little bit older relative to their competition level. It used to be like, okay, let's say you took a player who was going to be a 24, 25-year-old rookie. Pre-COVID, that player was playing against a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-olds. Now, the college players, because so many of them are taking, you know, the extra year, it's really maybe not the same calculus in terms of how you think about their production or skill set. So that does play a factor, but it's really probably just a minor part of the puzzle, to be honest. It's not something that would fundamentally change our approach.
Through the new kickoff rules, I guess, how do you envision that impacting personnel decisions and things like that?
Yeah, I actually think it'll have maybe I should back up. Truth is, none of us will really know until we get into it. I mean, You know, we've watched a ton of XFL film, even though it's not the same design. We've had a lot. I think Kevin mentioned earlier, earlier this week, how much time they've put into it. I think the style of returner will change ever so slightly. I think the blocking schemes that you see on kick return will be different, and I think the body type for kickoff coverage players is going to potentially change pretty significantly, because you're taking a lot of speed and space, out of the traditional play. I think you're going to probably see, you know, bigger body types, guys that are really good with their hands and that can, I would say, traditionally get off blocks as opposed to maybe use their speed and quickness to avoid a block, just because of the setup rules. But I'd say that's maybe more of a working hypothesis than, a stated fact. And I'm sure we're going to learn a lot as we get into the preseason and then the regular season with the new rule.
In college football, not everybody transfers, but a lot of guys do now. Mm-hmm. So how does that change the evaluation process as the post-pre-portal?
So I actually just got asked this question last night. And so it used to be transfers were so rare in college football that there was, you really wanted to dig in on why a player was changing schools. Because honestly, most of the times it ended up being some type of, you know, disciplinary issue or something along those lines. So it was something that you would really kind of alert and make sure you had your arms fully around why the player switched schools. And now it's just not that way at all. It's almost like, oh wow, this guy didn't transfer, that, you know, that type of thing. And so I think it's just more, less important, maybe the wrong word, but it's like less, it's not a flag anymore. And to be honest, it's actually a little bit more helpful, because you can get the perspective on the person in two totally different environments from, let's say two or three different staffs. So I actually think that's more helpful in understanding the person than anything.
How do you feel about the way that you guys have weathered not having three first-round picks?
I think one, time will tell. I think that there are a variety of ways to build, to build a team. I think, right, we saw, I think the Rams this week, if they keep their first round pick, it's the first round pick that they'll have in the Sean McVay era. And I also think the reality of the first round picks, like the league rate hit rate, it's like 50%. They're lottery tickets. They're good lottery tickets at the end of the day, and they're highly, highly valuable. But even if you have a first round pick, it's certainly not a certain thing. So I think maybe having a level of realism in terms of, what can be achieved with your pool of resources or your assets. That's really part of it, but we've been pretty systematic in terms of how we were going to deploy our picks, our dollars, how we were going to manufacture picks to make it up with volume. We feel pretty good about where the roster sits today. And but look, we are looking forward to having one back next year for sure.
With having three starting caliber offensive tackles, mm-hmm. expected to be ready, I think, by the start mm-hmm. of the season or at some point early on in the season, do you feel the same way about those guys that you do about the cornerbacks, that can't have too many good?
I do. And like, we've probably seen that in particular two out of the 4 years that we've been here, where, I think maybe one or two teams in the league end up having their starting five play the whole season on a given year. So, and that's one of the positions where once you get into the season, it's hard to acquire them. Like the big guys, they're hard to acquire once you get into camp. So, tackle's a premium position. We have good ones. Again, in no hurry to give anyone away.
All right, there you go. A little bit of a mailbag coming up next. Still time to get your questions into Gibbe on the X platform.
Oh, baby.
You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner, Cleveland Browns, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back into Cleveland Browns Daily. We should do the Griff Fact of the Day. We have not done that yet before we hit the mailbag.
Fact of the day, fact of the day, fact of the day. It's the Griff Fact of the Day.
The New York Jets own the last pick in this year's NFL draft. It's the first time since 1969 that they will pick last in the NFL draft. When they did in 1969, they selected Fred Zirkel, who is a defensive tackle from Duke. He never played a down in the NFL, though, because he turned down the opportunity to start a business with his father. All told, he has bought and sold multiple businesses now in 11 different countries and has closed more than $2 billion in transactions.
Smart choice out of him.
And good his job. Minimum salary Zirkle. In 1969 would have been $12,500. So
good job
probably
out of
made
him.
The right call.
That is a fun
it's
Griff
a great
fact,
fact
Griff. It's a great fact of the day, Griff, and delivered so eloquently by Uno. Good job, boys. Well
There's
done.
No Mike Junkin.
Go ahead, Gibby, with your mailbag.
The drop in right there.
Really did. Presented by the Cross Country Mortgage Company, the official mortgage partner of your Cleveland Browns. When it comes to financing, they'll always get you home. Visit ccm.com today. Equal housing opportunity, MLS 3029.
You can tweet at the show at Browns_daily. Browns backers, North Jersey.
All right.
Recently, Z mentioned that he likes Top Chef. Is he watching the current season? If so, what are his thoughts?
Unimpressed. I'm not impressed with this crop. I don't think this is so far. They feel like some of the worst chefs, in terms of the overall collection. Like you always can tell the people that have the chance and don't. Usually can tell that pretty early on. And we've been spoiled recently because the GOAT had been on the last few seasons. Like he won Top Chef. And then they did Top Chef All-Stars the next year, which are like former winners from U.S. around the world, or people came in second, like people who were really, really, really good.
Yep.
And he won that too, back-to-back. This guy, Buddha, he's unbelievable. So he is the best I've ever seen on the show. He made the best food, beautiful food, his restaurant. I want to go to in New York very badly. He's the GOAT. So I'm Team Buddha all the way, and these chefs so far, very average to me. Very
average. How do you feel that Padma is gone?
I miss Padma. I thought Padma was great. I miss her.
My parents watch it, and they're underwhelmed by the new hosting. They miss Padma
Kish.
A lot.
Yeah, she doesn't have – she was a chef herself.
Yeah, she won the show,
She
right?
won the show, yeah. So there – no, Padma was great because Padma – was much more about thinking about it, like how did it taste, what it looked like. She was sophisticated with her palate and all of that, but Padma was awesome. So, yes, I think it is definitely a little bit of a bummer. I do think that there's the one person I want to give a shout-out from this season who I think has been very, very good is Rasika. Rasika has been excellent. Makes some Indian cuisine, and she's quite good.
Cleveland is the reason, hypothetically, using my Madden brain, would you be okay with AB giving all of our 2024 draft picks up to the Pats to take Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Yeah.
1,000,000%.
What, one impact
six?
Dude?
Please.
Yes.
No. And you know what? I'll bonus you a sixth and a seventh.
I don't even care if he's like, it doesn't even matter that it's him. I'd say the same thing if it was Jamar Chase.
It's a 2, 3, 5, 6, and 2 7s.
Yes.
Yeah. Done.
Please.
And take him. What's the equivalent of that? It can't be more than 2 1s, and he's worth 2 1s.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reality is, I don't know that salary cap-wise that would be feasible, because you're going to need some of these people to be on your 53-man roster on rookie deals.
Right.
To afford everything else.
But there's no fun in that.
No, from a Madden standpoint. Sure, we're only playing for this year. Who cares about what our cap situation is going for?
Not worried about it.
Yeah. Then yes.
Would you if we also had a late one? Would you give it all up for – and whether it's him or whatever, he's in this draft, so it's fine. But, like, would you give up your entire draft if we also had a first-rounder to have the best position player in this draft?
Yes.
I think I would, too. Like, the sure thing?
No way.
The sure thing? I take the sure thing.
We need
– there's a lot of drafts.
A sure thing,
but here's the thing. I guess my point in all of this
– yesterday.
No, I know, but I'm like, if we're suggesting he is – going to be a sure thing in the way that Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase,
sure,
that type of thing. And most people think that he is. You're right. There is no sure thing. But for the sake of this conversation, pretend that he is. I would take one sure thing dude over the possibility of finding one somewhere else. The reality is
he's
that
done a pretty good job of it, though. MJ Emerson, DeJuan.
But there's also misses.
Of course, because it's an exact science. So that's my point. At the plate.
What I'm saying is this is one swing where the ball's down the middle,
it's
and you got a fungo bat.
But that's what everybody said with, like, Saquon.
I understand, but for this conversation, what we're saying is this is a receiver.
Yep.
And I'm saying if the belief is he's Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, let's pretend that he is going to have that type of impact, then I would do that in a second over the rest of the hope.
I don't think we can.
But it's fun. It's fun to talk about. I'd like to do it. It'd be great.
I think if you could get in it with a roster like this one that's really fully formed, and you said earlier this week, and I agree, you don't really need anything. You just need depth. Then if you get a dude.
Gibbe, if we did that, if we traded the whole draft, could we have Saturday of the draft off?
I would do everything in my power, yes, to give us Saturday off.
But I'm in. I'm in, baby.
I mean, that's golf Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, man.
I'm sure it'll rain and be 40.
Well, some of us have TV. Some of us don't just get to go willy-nilly and gallivant around unfettered like Gibbe.
Deputy Dog 981, that interview with Hollywood Higgins brought a smile to my face. He's one of us, beloved by Browns fans worldwide, Dennis from Loudonville. Jersey Dog tweets at the show. We hear NBC and Bootsy updates, but we need Beamsy updates as well.
Well, the thing with Beamsy is it's all close to the vest with Beamsy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty steady. So, like,
he takes care of his business.
He handles his business and he goes about it. And, you know, he's a, how's your day? Good, Dad. Skips through. I mean, that.
Great.
You know, so I don't, they're all different. You raise them all the same, but they all kind of, or you think you do, you try to. And then they all turn out very different.
Yes.
Yeah, he's laxing and AAU hooping and having the time of his life. But he's not as out there and loving every minute as the other two are.
If you can bring back one player for defense and offense who wore the white face mask in the 80s, who would it be?
Michael Dean Perry.
That's what I wrote down. You can look right there. Michael Dean Perry. But we get one on offense as well.
Metcalf. He'd be fun.
Can we get Ozzie Newsome?
Well, you could.
Yeah.
By definition, you could get him. Would you rather have, I mean, he's a gold jacket, but so now you'd have him and Chief, two tight ends?
Fine. He's a gold jacket.
He's a gold jacket, yeah.
Yeah, it feels pretty.
Are you suggesting we trade Chief?
No,
the acquisition of Ozzie Newsome?
I love Chief.
I know you do. So I
will
yeah, so
be able to play two tight ends. Our 11 personnel. Spread doesn't matter. Think about the blocking that we'd be able to do, and then who's covering these guys?
Good question.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Answer. No, yeah, that's what it. MDP, though, for sure. Was
my old Dean Perry is the no-brainer.
No-brainer.
Yes.
He doesn't. We've talked about it before.
We stumbled on those numbers. Geez,
people don't realize how great he was. I don't know why. I don't know if it's just because
he had his own burger.
Just because Fridge was such a force of nature that everybody paid so much attention to, but like.
He was a better player than
significantly better
than
and you could honestly argue like he's a Ring of Honor guy.
Six-time Pro Bowl, two-time All-Pro, the 1989 UPI Defensive Player of the Year.
I mean, God.
Yeah.
That's heavy, man. Yeah. And he doesn't get the credit for it.
No.
Enough from the clown. One for all the boys. Which is your favorite cut of steak, your
ribeye.
Favorite method of prep, onions, mushrooms, etc.?
Ribeye.
Ribeye, medium rare.
Yep.
I like mushrooms and onions. I don't need them, but if they're there, I'm not afraid.
Do you like to put them onto your steak?
No. But accompaniment.
Yeah, sure.
And every once in a while, I'll work in a bite that has a little bit of both. A little caramelized onion and a mushroom that doesn't
I like
gets
it.
Hurt.
My favorite preparation, I'm medium rare from a temperature standpoint, but I like to do like a little bistecca a la Fiorentina. So a little olive oil, salt and pepper, a little rosemary.
Yeah.
And then get it nice. And I've been doing lately, I've been perfecting this, thanks Top Chef, where I kind of get it in the sear pan. I put a little ghee in there.
Yeah.
And then I'm like spooning the ghee.
Oh,
on
yeah,
top
for sure. Yeah.
Oh,
Ramsay's
yeah.
always doing that. Like you tilt it and then you pour it on it.
Yeah.
So then you just take the fresh rosemary and you put the garlic
there.
In there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And you let that all bleed together and then into the butter and you're good.
Yeah.
The only thing is, I mean, so majority of my cooking is for five.
Yeah.
So I can't. 99% of my cooking is for five. So I can't be doing that with five steaks.
Yeah,
it's just not going to work.
Well, the sous vide helps them all be, but then you got
to. It does, but
on
I'm
the
still
grill.
Finishing.
Yeah, you have to finish one.
So it's back to the same process.
Totally.
So
yeah,
it's too time.
You can still have a nice grilled. I mean, a grilled steak is delightful.
It's pretty great. I am to the point though with steak at restaurants where I feel like I like my preparation
better
than restaurants.
Yes.
So like when I almost never order steak at a restaurant anymore. Almost never.
And I like, you know, you and I shop at times at the same similar grocer,
different
locations. But that American Wagyu ribeye they have there is
it's fantastic. Yeah,
better than anything you get in a restaurant for way less.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of usually I used to 20 years ago. I always get steak when Amy and I go out.
Yeah,
now almost never.
It's very rare. For
like
me.
If we go to at Indy, we're at Elmo's.
Sure.
Yeah, steak.
But I'll get the prime rib though.
For sure. Yeah, if that's there. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't say let's go out to a steakhouse. I say let's do Steakhouse Zagura this Saturday because we can do that, stay at home, have better steak. Wine is already there. It's already been
It's bought. Ready to go.
It's free.
The blonde texted me, you need to talk about Beamsy more. Don't leave my baby out. Not leaving him out. I praise him all the time. Yeah. It's just
he
lives a
right
more
thing.
Conserved life.
Here's the thing.
He's a more conservative boy,
and
you're right, Gibby. He does the right thing 90% of the time.
Yeah,
the other
like Abraham Lincoln.
The other two fly near the borders.
This is the world that Beamsy lives in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then here is the world that my man Bootsy lives in.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yep. NBC would be a mirror of Bootsy, but with more conscience.
So then his highs aren't quite as high because he's weighed down by the constraints of decent society.
But yes, correct. By having a conscience and being like, I don't know if I should
do that.
Yeah. By the way, our boy today, your boy,
Bubba. There it is.
Oh, there it is. Your
Who
boy, your boy today was young Bootsy. I told you of his honors. He's going to be doing the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
He's going to lead the Pledge of Allegiance.
Of course he is.
So this is a perfect example. So they were all asked to do this. NBC did it. Beamsy not. Didn't
Said
want
no
to.
Thanks.
No thanks.
I'm good.
Bootsy's going to do it.
Of course he is.
But I will say this. Beamsy was asked to like be the representative for his grade to welcome the new teachers to the school. And so he had to talk in front of the new teachers every year. And he did that 2 years in a row. So he did do that.
He's an ambassador.
He's an ambassador. Yes.
Lead
question.
By example. Not
question.
By
what wanted. Happened with my... correspondence.
I was just going to ask.
Oh, yeah.
Has it gone to class?
What was the
I think
reaction
it's gone to
letter?
Class, and I think, oh, well, his, I told you his reaction.
Yeah.
Were you here?
No.
Okay.
Or
he couldn't, because, and we had that whole conversation about how these kids can't read handwriting, right? So, like, Z's writing, which is, I could read perfectly fine because you're used to reading other people's handwriting. No, yours is way better than mine, I promise you. But he couldn't read it. So I set up to record him reading it, but he couldn't read it. So then I had to read it, and he had a huge smile the whole way. And then at the end, he like raced down and was like telling his brothers, "I'm going to WWE with Mr. Z."
Yes.
Yeah.
What happened?
That was
at school?
His big takeaway.
Those...
Yeah, it's a good question. I know that
yeah,
they
I'd
had
like
it. I know that he took it in, and they all had to do it, and that he did take it in. I don't know what.
Tell him I think that it would be appropriate if it is framed on his wall.
Probably already is. I know that the cards that you and I got from the card collector thing are both in hard cases on his dresser. Like, they're in there. So they're there. They're ready to go.
I love it.
Meanwhile,
I'm
the other two.
I feel like my best chance now is for Bootsy to be like, can Mr. Z come over and play? I feel like that's my best chance to get an invite.
I'll tell you what. He'll ask. He got in it last night. Both him and Beamsy were upset because we've taken away the Fortnite. We've taken away the Fortnite like Monday to Thursday with them because it was just getting out of control. But then NBC's 12, and they're like, well, why does he get to do it and we don't? And I'm like, he's 12, you're 10 and 8. Different rules for different folks. When you get 12, then you can do it.
Yeah.
They were not pleased at all.
Come on, Dad.
Come on. It's not fair.
It's ageist.
My thing now, they're like, all my friends are doing it. I said, well, go move in with them. You go live with them, parents. I'll take that kid. You go there. It's so great. Go there. Go live with them.
I'll take Bootsy.
You would. I think you think you would. I think it would be, what would it be like? It would be like Kevin when he first got the house to himself in Vacation or in Home Alone.
Yeah.
And like
or
the
Big Daddy.
Yeah. Or like that. It'd be like amazing in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then it would be like, wow, this kid crushes a lot of snacks. It's a relentless pursuit of snacks.
We got snacks.
Yeah, but you'd never be able to keep up. Because you go shopping once a day, like, for the meal. He's not interested in the meal.
No,
he wants the snacks.
We have the pantry. I'll just go, hey, tons of different kinds of chips.
There's no way you could properly have that thing stocked.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know what just happened, but my earphones work again.
How about that?
So they weren't working the whole show. I didn't know, couldn't hear anything coming
back.
And
now you're back?
And
There's a short underneath that thing, is what I think. There's a short in that box.
Always happens with his stuff. No one else's.
So much more to come. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Now we're up. Good. Yep. Week from today, first round of the draft.
Oh, baby. Here we go. 2024 NFL season. Here we go.
Billy and Rod.
Billy and Rod, 2024.
That's here. Hackney Diamonds Tour. There it is. You still think we're going to get that signed by both of them?
I know it.
Incredible. Next level's next, kids. We're back tomorrow. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.